Let's continue our 4.5-year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by opening to the Gospel of Luke chapter number 6. Have in readiness the parallel passage in Matthew 12 and in Mark chapter 2. Last time we were together, we were talking about a confrontation over Sabbath healing that took place during a Jewish feast down at Jerusalem. That's all recorded in John chapter number 5. I believe that that feast was likely the feast of Passover and unleavened bread that took place in the spring of 31. That would have been at the very beginning of Jesus' second year of ministry. After he finished there, he would have returned to Galilee where he had started doing ministry. And that means, since Passover is already finished, that the barley harvest is now in full swing all through Galilee, and the wheat is still ripening on the stalks of the different fields. And the reason that's important is because the next story clearly takes place while the grain is still on the stalk in the field. So it's either barley that has not yet been harvested or wheat that has not yet been harvested. So with a little bit of that background, let's go ahead and start reading from Luke chapter 6. On a Sabbath, remember the Sabbath is the seventh day of the Jewish week, starts on Friday night at sunset and continues until Saturday night at sunset. So on a Sabbath, while he was going through the grain fields, so grain fields were scattered all over Galilee, and paths, roads, passed through these grain fields. And according to the Mosaic law, any passerby was permitted to snap off and prepare and to eat any type of head of grain to kind of deal with their immediate hunger. Now, they couldn't just start harvesting any field for their own long-term benefit, but they could eat the fruit of the field until they were satisfied. Similar rules would have applied passing through a vineyard, through a fruit orchard, anything like that, because the crop actually belonged to God himself. But individual Israeli families were responsible for bringing in the larger harvest that was on their hereditary land. So his disciples, as they're passing through between these ripening fields, they plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. So they just snap off the head, rub it between their hands to get the husk off, probably blew the chaff away, and then popped the grain kernels into their mouth and enjoyed it. Well, they apparently got spotted doing this. Verse 2, some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath?" And in the Matthew and the Mark account, they also yell at Jesus about that. "Look, your disciples are doing what's not lawful to do on the Sabbath." Now we need to evaluate. Does the Mosaic law say that you can't break off a grain head and satisfy your individual hunger on the Sabbath day? And the answer is no, it doesn't say that anywhere. So where do these guys get off saying that it's a breaking of the law? They get off that way because they claim to be the repository of all knowledge about how the law should be interpreted and applied. So they've come to the conclusion that for an individual to snap off the top of a grain plant, that's counted as harvesting and that's work. To rub that grain head between your hands, that is threshing, and that's work. To blow the chaff away, that's winnowing, and that's work. And so they are bringing this charge according to their traditional understanding that doing that as an individual on the Sabbath day is work and therefore a violation of the Sabbath law. Now, the closest thing that I could tell you in our own modern society, so that you can have an appreciation how kind of goofy this is according to this standard, to tear open or to pop open any type of food container on the Sabbath day would be counted as work by this standard. And that just doesn't make any sense as to the intent of the Sabbath rest rules. And that's what Jesus is actually going to tell them, is that they are out of bounds. They are off kilter in their application of Scripture. So verse number 3, Jesus answered them. So Jesus responds with a story from the Old Testament. This story comes from 1 Samuel chapter 21. It says, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those with him?" So he takes them back to this story that happens right after David escapes from Saul, almost 2 years before Saul is killed and David becomes king. He is secreted out of the house by his wife, Michal, and he doesn't have any supplies with him because he's left so suddenly. He doesn't even have a weapon with him. So apparently he leaves Gibeah, because that was the capital city at this time, the town of Saul, that's just a few miles north of Jerusalem. And 1 Samuel 21 says, David came to Nob, which was a priestly city that's also north of Jerusalem, not very far from Gibeah, and right next door to the tabernacle. So he came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech came to meet David, trembling, and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one with you?" I gather that Ahimelech understood that there was a tension between David and King Saul, and so this is rather nerve-wracking for him to have David show up, apparently on the Sabbath day, as we'll learn in a moment. But David said to Ahimelech the priest, "The king has charged me with a matter and said to me, 'Let no one know anything of the matter about which I send you and with which I have charged you.'" And now that's not true. It's a cover story that he's spinning here. That's a whole nother subject that we can talk about at another time. But he says, "I have made an appointment with the young men for such and such a place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread," or whatever's here. So he'd apparently got a message off to some of his men that he would meet them at a rendezvous point, and then they would go on from there into the wilderness area and kind of keep ahead of Saul's murderous intentions. But like I said, none of them have supplies, and so David asks the high priest for some bread. Now the priest answered David, "I have no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread if the young men have kept themselves from women." So it's apparently on the Sabbath day because there is no fresh bread available other than the fresh bread that's just been put on the table of the bread of the presence, which happened evidently on Sabbath morning. They would bake it before the sun went down on Sabbath Eve and then have a ceremony where they replaced it. And then apparently later in the day, the bread that had been taken off the table would then be consumed in a fellowship meal among the priests. And that's the sticking point that Jesus is highlighting here. God makes it very clear in the Mosaic Law, only the priests may eat that retiring bread of the presence, and they have to eat it at the tabernacle. No one else is authorized. But here, Ahimelech is trying to be helpful to David, and he's apparently willing to break the rule that is very clear. So he says, I can give you this special bread as long as your men and yourself are all sexually chaste. That is, you haven't had sexual relations with women for the last few hours. That technically makes a man unclean until he goes through ceremonies, and I think the sun has to set one more time after that. So David's response is basically, women have been kept from us as always when we go on an expedition. The vessels of the young men are holy, even when it's an ordinary journey. How much more today will their vessels be holy? So they'd apparently always started their military expeditions by a sexual fast and going through a period of ceremonial cleansing to get ready to go into their campaign. So that's what they've done here too. So the priest went ahead and gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there but the bread of the presence, which is removed from before he who is to be replaced by hot bread on the day it is taken away. All right, so back to the story in Luke. Jesus' point is, hey, how come you don't have a critique of David for the fact, or the high priest, Ahimelech, for the fact that they violated a very specific rule of the Mosaic Law by having David and his men eat the bread of the presence? And the implication is, there is no such clear-cut rule here that you're complaining about. In the Matthew account, there's a little bit more detail that Jesus gives regarding how the Pharisees are willing to give passes for certain behaviors that they think are just matters of necessity. So verse number five, or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? So priests on the Sabbath day went through all of the normal ceremonies, which meant that they had to butcher animals and carry the meat, throw it on the fire. The Levites who tended the fires had to do all that. Ashes had to be removed. Wood had to be replaced. All of that normal activity at the tabernacle happened even on a Sabbath day. And the Pharisees were perfectly fine with that because in their mind, that's a necessity. It has to happen. It's an exception to God's overarching rule. A similar thing they believed about the circumcision ceremony. Every baby boy had to be circumcised on the eighth day of their life. Well, statistically, one-seventh of all boys are going to be born in such a sequence that their circumcision has to take place on the Sabbath day, which means that the priest has to go through a ceremony of cutting away the foreskin and doing all the bundling up and the prayers and the anointing, all the things that would be counted as work. And the Pharisees gave them a pass because it was necessary to keep the law of God, that an exception had to be given regarding the Sabbath rule. And so here Jesus is just showing them you guys are always open to making exceptions that you think are necessary, but then you go overboard by condemning people who are not even breaking an explicit rule, only your tradition. And this keeps him in confrontation with the Pharisees for the rest of his ministry, by the way. In Matthew chapter 12, continuing, verse number 6, Jesus says, "I tell you, something greater than the temple is here." And so the actions going on in the temple that have to happen, they're willing to give a pass on the Sabbath rules. And Jesus says, "I'm telling you, there is something bigger than temple ceremonies that's going on right now." Verse 7, one more application. "And if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless." That's a quote from Hosea 6, verse 6. It's the whole point that we see, not just in Hosea, but Micah and other passages, that God is not interested in the ceremony so much as he's interested in the heart. He wants relationship, not ritual. Now, ritual can be important, but relationship is much more important, which is why God condemned the Israeli people, both the northern Israelis and the southern Judeans, for carrying on acts of worship that their hearts were not in compliance with. There came one point that he was even speaking through the prophets saying, "I wish you would just close the doors of the temple. I wish you would quit lighting fires, quit praying, quit offering sacrifices, because your hearts are far from me." So here he puts it in front of the Pharisees saying, if you guys understood that that's what God wanted, relationship, not ritual, you would not be hassling my disciples right this moment, because their hearts are perfectly innocent in the picking of those heads of grain and consuming them, because they were just hungry. They were not trying to harvest a field. And then Matthew 12, verse 8, finishes with this: "For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." And of course, Jesus is known by the title Son of Man. It's an Old Testament term that just basically means human being, but it ends up becoming a title for the Messiah. So he basically says that Messiah gets to set the meaning of the rules. Now, verse 27 of Mark 2 has one more little unique part of this story, and that is that Jesus said to them, as an application, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." And so you got to think what the purpose of the Sabbath day was. And this should be especially important for a Jewish person. For the Jewish people, their first real introduction to the purpose of the Sabbath day happened at the Exodus. They had been kept as slaves for a long time. They never had a day off. They worked 7 days a week, long hours in those days. They didn't get holidays, vacations, nothing. They just worked, 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 worked. And when God brought them out of Egypt, he built into the law a protective day off for everybody. Everybody got the same day off, and it was protected by law. Nobody was supposed to do their regular job on the Sabbath day. Now, immediately, we know of exceptions to that, don't we? We've already talked about Jewish exceptions regarding the priests and the Levites who had to do their work on the Sabbath day. They would have gotten comp days, I am sure. In our modern society, Jewish people, would probably make exceptions for emergency service workers, police, fire, ambulance, hospital, because somebody needs to be doing their work on the Sabbath day in order to save lives, to protect the innocent and care for the troubled and the hurt. And so the purpose of the Sabbath was to give people a day off, but not to enslave them to rules regarding, the oral traditions of the Pharisees as to exactly what work consists of, especially when it's ridiculous as opening up the wrapper on a candy bar, which is roughly equivalent to what these guys did when they were passing through the field that day. So again, Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. He knows the purpose. He gets to call the meaning of it. Now, that's not the end of the story. In Luke chapter number 6, as well as in the Matthew 12 context, and then going into Mark chapter 3, we have another Sabbath. Now, Luke 6, verse 6, makes it very plain it is another Sabbath day. It's an other Sabbath day. You can get the impression when you're reading through Matthew and Mark that it might have been the same Sabbath day, but Luke makes it clear it's not. I'm guessing it's probably the following Sabbath day. So Luke 6:6, on another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching. So we already know that Jesus has developed this habit that he goes to synagogues in all the different cities that he visits, and he preaches and teaches there. He reads from the scripture, and then he applies it and expands on it, explains it with authority. And so that's what he's doing on this day. And there's somebody there that day of interest. It says a man was there whose right hand was withered. So it's atrophied because something has happened to him where that hand has no muscle tone to it anymore. It might even be contractured up where he cannot use it at all. It's probably that whole right lower arm at the very least. Jewish people in this time period, in this culture, the whole hand up to the elbow was pretty much, that was the hand area. All right, so verse number 7 then tells us that he's being watched. Verse 7, the scribes and Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might find a reason to accuse him. He's being dogged now. He's being followed. And these Pharisees are basically on standby to accuse him of breaking rules so that they can bring him up on charges and get rid of him because they've come to the conclusion he is a troublemaker from their perspective. So there they are in the Sabbath watching him, and they suspect that he's probably going to help this guy out, and then they can jump on top of him. Now, verse 8 says, he knew their thoughts. And he said to the man with the withered hand, come, stand here. And he rose and stood there. So Jesus brings the guy up into the center of the synagogue where everybody can watch him. Everybody can see him. And they know what's coming next. They're pretty sure what's coming next. But Jesus first asks a question. Verse 9, Jesus said to them, I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save a life or to destroy it? And the Pharisees actually had already answered this question in their discussions. And that is, if it's an emergency situation, you should do something to help. In fact, there's this whole idea about the sheep, which is mentioned. that if a sheep falls into a pit, then you are permitted to get it out if it's in danger of dying. And so Jesus will use that on another occasion. But he asked this question, but guess what they do? They refuse to answer. They remain silent. That's the Mark 3:4 passage. And since we're in Mark 3, let me read verse 5 next. It says, he looked around at them with anger. This is one of the few places that we hear this negative emotion in our English Bibles had by Jesus against the Pharisees as troublemakers. The next line explains. It says he was grieved at their hardness of heart. Don't think of the idea of him being furious, you know, out of control, mad. He is just frustrated with these people's hard-heartedness that they will do anything to take him down. Only because he's doing the work of God, and they won't accept that. So he looks around at them with this anger because of their hardness of their hearts, and then he says to the man, stretch out your hand. So go ahead and just stretch your hand out, which apparently he could not have done up until this moment. And then the instantaneous miracle happens. He was able to stretch it out, and his hand was restored. And of course, everybody in the place would have been excited and praising God, except for the Pharisees. Because the Mark 3:6 passage says, the Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how they might destroy him. Herodians are those that just uphold the idea of a Herod that should be on the throne in Judea as well. But now these groups are all aligned together with the idea Jesus is a danger because he violates our religious traditions.